Feeling your sit bones grounded. Your feet flat on the floor. And while you stay sitting up tall, scanning down your physical form and just relaxing it without slumping forward. And then scanning back up to the crown of your head. And resting on the rhythm of your breath. As your awareness stays on the breath, the physical body stays relaxed, stress-free. Releasing all distracting thoughts. come to your breath really brightly for the last few moments. And gently releasing the breath. Starting to feel the full body, your weight on the chair. Hearing the noises around you. And when you're ready, you can start to move and make a dedication, opening your eyes. Will you wake it up, Bernardo? I think that the one that came to class, he said we have to download it.
Have to?
In order for it not to go to sleep or something, so we'll try that next time.
Yeah.
All right. Guys, been thinking about death meditation or about the courses, like the classes in between, in any way? Has it been like sinking in?
Yeah.
Last class we talked about the hell. Went through all the hells.
Oh no, that one I tried to avoid that.
Yeah. Are there
too cold?
Yeah, I know. Are there any questions, or do you want to share any way that you're practicing that might be helpful to other people? Or maybe how it's affecting your life?
Well, I was thinking about that a lot after class. And I don't know, for 1 second I thought maybe it's all like a lie, you know, like just to make you just practice more, because it'll be like terrible to be in places like that just for a tiny second, and then the amount of time that you're supposed to spend there in those places is just too much.
Oh yeah.
But you know, like, I don't know.
So did you land somewhere with that thinking?
No, I just stayed like that.
Yeah, so maybe almost like you don't want it to be true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say that. Do you guys have anything you want to share?
There were bugs.
Bugs?
But the other day, there was a bug. In my bathroom. Like the usual, you know, there's always a bug that I see in my bathroom. Like a little tiny one. Gnats sometimes, I guess, come in.
Yeah.
I didn't kill it.
Oh, that's good.
I think it's the knowing, but I didn't think directly, like, okay, I gotta remember these howls and then not kill. You know, it was like almost like I just didn't do it because I don't know if it is the learning this and it just kind of sunk in a way where it made me not do it.
Yeah. Probably. That's what it sounds like. That's good.
And then there was this, I had ordered something on Amazon, and two of them came.
Instead of one?
Uh-huh. And then I was like, should I just keep it? And then I was just thinking of the right thing, you know, based off of these classes. Just, I don't, no good can come out of it. But then I'm like, gosh, so much trouble to return it. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been on my mind. Like, it's just in my mind.
Did you email the seller and tell them that they sent you an extra one? A lot of times they just tell you to keep it anyways, because I think a lot of times the cost of the shipping is even more than like if they pay for it back. Like when I've returned things, I don't think anyone's ever sent me two, but when I've wanted to return things, a lot of times they just say don't even worry about it. Like I'm not going to use it, but they just say don't worry about it. Or if something's wrong with it, they'll send me a whole new one, but not even have me send the other one back or something. So they might just say something like that too. But that's good that you're thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to see when the teachings are like sinking in. Do you have anything you want to share, Linda? Okay. All right. So we're on class 8 already. It's Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. Do you have a cold?
Huh?
Do you have a cold? Or is it allergies?
I think it's allergies.
No. It's fine. So we're going to talk about the description of time and space and the cycles of eons. This one... After going over the hells last time, Geshe Michael said that he put this one in as kind of like a break for us. So the last two classes you should try to come to, because we're going to go over death meditation, death meditation according to Jason Kappa. Okay. So all of these things are really cool. They're really interesting to learn. Even if it's just like a supposed to be an easy class. So say Kalpa.
Kalpa.
And does anyone know what that means?
Destruction.
Eon. Mm-hmm. It means eon. So there's four different kinds of Kalpas in Buddhism. This is all from the third chapter of the Abhidharma Kosha. And this is just a little piece from that long chapter on the measure of time and space. So it's really cool. Okay, so number one, say Jigpe Kalpa.
Jigpe Kalpa.
Jigpe Kalpa.
Jigpe Kalpa.
And that, so Jigpe is destruction, Kalpa is eon. And so we translate it from back to forward into English. So it's eon of destruction. And there's four things that happen at the same time. These are really interesting because it kind of gives us an idea of where we are in these different eons. So the first thing that happens in the eon of destruction is that no more beings are born in the Avicii hell of this planet, which is the lowest hell. Do you guys remember what that was from last week?
It was the smaller room enclosure.
That was one of them, but the very lowest one was a little different. It's the one where... there's like this, what would you call it? Almost like this huge torch of flame that's just lighting this being on fire. and you can like barely see an outline of a being, and there's just like some faint like moaning or something, because that's the most pain that you can endure or that you can experience. Right. Yeah. So the first thing that happens, well, four different things happen at the same time. So the first of the four we're going through in the Aeon of Destruction is that no more beings are born in the Avicii Hell of this planet. So there's no time to go through Avicii Hell if the planet is being destroyed. So that's what's happening. Beings are born in Avicii Hell of another planet instead. So because the world's going to be ending, there's not enough time for someone to live out their time in that hell of this planet, so they're sent somewhere else. And then the second thing that happens at the same time are lifespans on Zambuling, which is our world, human beings, reach 80,000 years. So, if I remember... I know, it's a long time. The third simultaneous thing is the Aeon of Continuation ends, and we'll talk more about that. And then the Aeon of Destruction opens. So all these things happen at the same time. The above, so all of these four things simultaneously happen at the beginning of the Aeon of Destruction. And then this is followed by animals and craving spirits being born on other planets instead of here. Humans reach the meditative attainment of the first level of the form realm, and then they die and they take birth there. But before they die, they teach all the other beings how to do the same thing. And so they all start being reborn in the form realm. And then the beings in the first level of the form realm attain the second level of the form realm meditation. And so they die and then they're reborn there. So everything in the desire realm is emptying up, all up to the second level of the form realm. So you can basically think of Earth as totally emptied out.
What do beings in the form realm look like again?
I don't remember if there was a specific description in the form realm.
I never remember the form realm, I feel like. I always remember like formulas and answers, but it's hard for me to think of.
I don't know if I've heard a description of what they look like. I think the way Geshe Michael, how I remember him describing it, is as a human form.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know for sure.
But not in the desire
realm. Well, still all in the suffering realm. But yeah, in the form realm, they don't have that same attachment to the gross level of things that we do.
Okay.
Like food, sex, you know, whatever gross level other things that we're attracted to, like taste, smell, touch, those sorts of things, because they've withdrawn their mind more than that. So they're not the same in that way. They're still part of the cycle of suffering. They're not outside of it, because they're not necessarily highly realized beings, because they've just done that meditation over and, you know, they just spent all that time in meditation in their life, and in order to be born there. So it did take good karmic seeds to get there, but
are these the same ones as where their life is like really good until death? No, that's different.
Mm-mm. That's the God realm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where it's really, really good, and then like towards the end, all these really terrible things happening.
And can we see form realm beings?
But I believe with any realm, we can see any realm if a Buddha takes us there.
Okay.
I've only heard that example used with the hell realms, but I believe, like, just logically, it would make sense that it could be any of the realms. At least in the cycle of suffering. I don't know if they could take us to Buddha paradise and we could see it. But maybe. Okay, so it takes 19 intermediate eons for the desire realm to empty out after the process has started in the beginning of the eon of destruction. So say Barkal means intermediate eon, and there are 20 intermediate eons that make up an eon of destruction. So the first slide, 20 of these make up one of those. And it takes 19 intermediate eons for beings to empty off the planet. And then at the beginning of the 20th eon, in a destruction eon, the rain stops on this planet and then all vegetation dies. The sun begins to supernova and splits into two. Millions of years later, a third sun forms and then all the rivers and streams dry up. So it's progressively getting worse. A fourth sun forms and large lakes dry up. A fifth sun forms and oceans dry up. A sixth sun forms and then the four continents and Mount Meru go up in a puff of smoke. And then the seventh sun forms and the whole planet burns up, which also causes the first level of the form realm to burn up. And then there are other kalpas of destruction by wind or water. Then there's also minor destruction eons where inhabitants destroy each other with weapons. You know, we can kind of relate to that one. Or they set the whole earth on fire with some special weapon, like a nuclear bomb maybe. Or famine happens, etc. And then millions of years pass between the formation of each new sun. So as those suns are being added. And then that's the eon of destruction. Did you guys ever see, I think it was called Melancholia? Pretty sure that's what it was called.
Yeah.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one with Kirsten Dunst where...
Yes, yeah, that's the...
And it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's kind of depressing, huh?
It's related to something about the Antichrist.
I don't remember that part. I just remember, they're all preparing for the end of the world that they think is coming. Have you seen that?
Same director. It's called the Antichrist, the one I saw.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you've seen Melancholia, too?
No, then I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you'll see it.
It's on Netflix, right?
Maybe. It won't... It will... I mean, do you want me to tell you what happens in it? So it's similar to this.
I want to see that.
Yeah, it's similar to this. It's really... It's an interesting movie. I think it's really good. It's a little... dark, but not too much, and it's definitely not like your normal ending to a movie. But it's similar to this idea of what we're talking about. And who else is in it? Sofia Coppola, I think.
Is she there?
I think so. I think that's who else is in it, and I really like her.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting movie.
I'm gonna see it.
Mm-hmm. I saw it a long time ago.
Do these eons have an order that they go in, or how does it really interact with time?
You mean like are the millions of years the same as like a million years that we experience or something like that?
Yeah. Or how do they...
Because these are kind of like, they're just measuring, like an intermediate eon is 20, takes 20 of those to make an eon of destruction. So they're kind of just like incrementally measuring, you know, like we have a decade and then century or something like that. It's sort of like that. So there's 20 intermediate in the eon of destruction. So it's just, it's describing, they're describing how the earth is destroyed, or this world is destroyed.
Sorry.
But is this answering what you're asking? But it's not like a different, from what I understand, it's not like a different measure of time. It's just a lot longer. So it's like we're looking at like this very small measurement. Like on the, I don't remember if we saw this chart or not in this class, but on the chart of how the kalpas move, they're kind of like this. And we're getting like down to here, where lifespan's getting shorter and shorter and shorter. But our lives in this planet are like barely even register on that. They're like so tiny. So this is just the Abhidharma's like panned out view of time and space and how things exist. And we live kind of like in this tiny little narrow view usually. Although we're part of the whole view because we've lived for beginningless time, and we, at least our consciousness goes on for beginningless time too. So it's kind of like giving us the big picture. Okay, and then say Chakpe Kalpa.
Chakpe Kalpa.
Chakpe Kalpa.
Chakpe Kalpa.
So Chakpe is formation, Kalpa is eon. So this one is the eon of formation, which you can guess what this is. So this one goes on for the length of 20 intermediate eons, but it doesn't have the up and down wave structure of an intermediate eon. It only has one downslope. So in the very first one, the world forms. And that energy gets stronger and stronger until the world forms. We talked about this before. And then the first beings who take birth start to appear. And they have bodies which radiate light. And the sun and the moon don't necessarily have to be there, because these beings produce their own light from their body. And they can fly in the sky, and they're very gentle.
Are these the beings that would have died when the earth burned up?
Mm-mm. Because they're the ones that are there at the start of the earth. And then you'll see what happens to them. Okay. So that for these beings, the whole planet is edible. They can just lick anything for sustenance. So it's kind of like the Garden of Eden. And then they slowly start to collect bad deeds, and their bodies start to change. And then we went over this too. So they start doing more and more negativity. And then it's, you know, like a very slow slide to the destruction of the earth again. So their bodies start to become hard, and then they have to eat, and they're doing more and more bad deeds. Are they what?
Are those the ones that, when they die, they go to directly to the lower one? No.
I don't think necessarily. What are you referring to? Something in particular?
No, I was referring to the different beings that we talked about. Humans.
Oh no, these aren't like the God realm where they use up all their good karmic seeds. It's, at least from what it sounds like, they're not the same.
Okay.
because they're here in the human realm.
Okay.
So yeah, they're building up bad deeds, but from what it sounds like, I don't know that it'd necessarily be that they wouldn't be born as a human again. They could be. So during this time, human lives are immeasurable. Usually it's a number with like more than 30 zeros after it at this point. So they have a really long lifespan. And then the formation eon ends when the first being is born in Avicii Hell. So when someone's done like something bad enough to be born in the Avicii Hell, then the formation eon ends. That's when that ends. And then lifespans have dropped to 80,000 years at that point from immeasurable or millions of years or however you want to look at it. And then that's the end of the eon of formation, which leads to the opening of the next one, which is Nepe Kalpa.
Nepe Kalpa.
So Nepe is continue, Kalpa eon. And so this one is the continuation eon. And it goes on for 20 intermediate eons. So in this one, lifespans drop from 80,000 years all the way down to 10 years because people are doing the 10 non-virtues. And they're doing them more and more, which creates disturbances in the world. So start out way up here and then dropping down to all the way down to 10 years, which is like nothing.
Yeah.
That's pretty much. Wow.
Uh-huh. I don't know if they would like age faster or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so the Abhidharma gives a very sad description of how this happens. People start to create more and more powerful weapons. Most of the people are living in huge cities. And then there's some people who are out in the country, say, picking berries one day. When the weapons of destruction are unleashed and the whole world is destroyed in fire, and only they survive. And then those few who survive, they're overcome with remorse, and they comfort each other, and they decide to give up the 10 non-virtues. So it's all this big cycle. And then they have these meetings, and they begin to live in settlements, and they give up the 10 bad deeds. And then because of their virtuous behavior, their lifespans increase from 10 years back up to 80,000. I'm assuming over time. And then the same cycle keeps repeating. And one cycle is an intermediate eon. So we're in what is called the time of the 100. Basically, people live to be about 100. Most of us are in that range. And lifespans haven't changed much, but compared to 80,000 years, our lifespans are like a blip. It like doesn't even register.
How old are you? I'm 53,000.
So the eon of continuation is made up of 20 intermediate eons. So the world is destroyed 20 times by people. And the first intermediate eon is only half a wave, but the drop in lifespans is slower in that eon. So it ends up taking the same length of time as the other intermediate eons. And then the same is true for the last intermediate eon. And we've talked about this before, how a moment of anger directed at a bodhisattva destroys an intermediate eon's worth of virtue. So now we kind of have an idea of what that is.
Wait,
A moment of anger directed at a bodhisattva destroys an intermediate eon worth of virtue. And so the problem is that we don't know who is a bodhisattva and who isn't, so we shouldn't get angry at anyone.
Please don't get angry at me right now.
Yeah. And I think the longer we study, you maybe see this already in life, but any moment of anger or like letting any strong emotion really like take over and grabbing onto it, it creates almost like you can feel the ripple effect, because as we're meditating more and studying more, our mind's more calm, and it's like we have a hangover from it almost. It's just like this kind of this sadness that comes from it or something like that. And then we, you know, we don't go there quite as much. But it's a really hard balance between, like not ignoring some things that maybe do have some sort of helpful message for us, or, you know, that we do need to pay a little more attention to, and to getting totally engulfed in them and then just like not being able to get our mind off it for like days, because once they take hold, like they really take hold. So it's a tough balance to learn. But when you get used to being more stable, when you fall off, it's like really traumatic physically too, I think, in my experience at least. So, and I think it's like that for everyone, but some people are just living in it all the time. So there's just not another point of reference for comparison. That's just like what you're immersed in. And I think maybe it's like building up a tolerance to anything like caffeine or alcohol or even sugar or, you know, like unhealthy food. If you eat it all the time, it doesn't affect you that much in the moment. It may have long-term effects, and then if you don't eat it at all and then you have it, then it's crazy. Like the other day at a barbecue, I had frozen yogurt, which was really good. And it was pineapple sorbet that was like, you know, a normal size of frozen yogurt, but it was big. And then I had like a hamburger and some other stuff. And I felt like so terrible after. I think it was mostly the sugar, but it's not like my diet's that clean.
Physically
and like it definitely affected me mentally, because I was like really spacey from all the sugar, I think. But even that sort of thing starts to affect us really in a really big way if we're cleansed of it in some manner, or at least at that portion size. Because we have anger coming up all the time in some way, but probably, you know, well, definitely at a certain point, it's not going to be coming up like that, because we're going to be more in control of our mind. So, but it's a hard balance, I find, to really know if something's important enough to give it that airtime. Because it can really throw off your practice too, and your meditation, and just like, you know, your week or whatever to go there. And maybe, I know Elaine, I was talking to her one time, and she said like, basically that she's feeling some real strong emotion. She doesn't go there or talk to anybody about it at all at that time. She waits until it dies down. And so if we have like that sort of choice, but sometimes we'll start talking about something and it comes up like as we're talking, and we don't even like we're unprepared, like we didn't even know that there was something so strong there. So I don't know. It's a hard balance, but we can see the destruction of anger as we clean our mind out more and more. We can see how destructive it is just to us. I mean, like, not just us, but our feeling body and like our energy body just in the moment. So thinking about what kind of karmic imprint that plants too, that's growing and growing for the future. So it's like, yeah, it's a challenging balance, because it's easy to get sucked in by those things, but you also don't want to just kind of deny everything, because you have to be very delicate to not be suppressing, and it's hard to know when you're doing that or when you're not. At least for me, in my experience, it is.
Have you tried that? Not talking about things?
Yeah, and mostly when I've done that, I'll just say, okay, I'm not going to do this right now. We'll come back if we want to later. And later, I never want to. It doesn't seem important. I think a lot of it is that strong emotion. Yeah.
Yeah, it went away. Yeah. The same thing happens to me. When I'm angry, it's there.
And it feels like you have to do something right then about it.
And then I go and do something else, and then when I go, okay, now I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Just forget about it. Why?
Yeah.
But then if you, gosh, my sponsor had told me this last time I called her, I was like, I need to talk to you in this panic. And then she's like, well, you need to pray about it and write about it before we talk.
Oh,
so, then, like,
so that you're like clear.
Oh. I don't know. Is it best to kind of leave it, and then at what point do you deal with it on meditation, like during the meditation, or
like were you weren't talking to her about something having, like you weren't talking to her about something she did, right? It was about some other situation. So when do you just leave it, or when do you bring it into your meditation? Is that what you're asking?
Or when you do feel those strong emotions, if you have the time to do meditation at some point, that's the most beneficial?
Well, I don't know if it's the most beneficial, but I think that's really helpful. You know, like how Elaine teaches the clear, wide, open, blue space. And like you open up all your awareness and then you bring it back when your mind wanders. I think that one seems pretty helpful to me, because you can kind of, like, everything doesn't seem so big, number one, because you're part of this wide open space. And things can kind of like move through. Yoga is really helpful too, or doing some sort of physical. A lot of times you can, like if you notice it, you can just take the label off of it, and underneath it's just all energy. It's not anger. It's just anger when we're labeling it. So it's not necessarily that. It's like that label that's making it feel like anger. And so it's kind of through like doing a physical practice, or it could be just a mental practice if we're not in a place where we could do that. We can just stay with the energy, but without labeling it in a way. So basically all of those, you're just going into like a non-conceptual space and letting the energy move through instead of spiraling out with it. And then like it's a good idea to journal about it and reflect on it. Yeah. And also, I mean, we probably all experienced this in some way, but a really good, like, hot period of anger can destroy a really long-standing relationship or damage it to where it never really recovers in the same way. So that's another reason that so that we can avoid doing that at all costs. Because really, it's probably not even something that we would ever say if we didn't have such strong emotion at the time. And maybe we don't even believe it, but we just say it because we're like lashing out and trying to basically be destructive. Okay, and then there is Cao-chen.
Cao-chen.
And Cal, I'm going to admit it. I think Cal would be Eon, but.
Cao-chen.
Great Eon. I wonder if Chen is another word for Eon. I don't know. But it translates to great Eon. And this one great Eon is 80 intermediate Eons long. This one's short, and then we'll take a break. So what Geshe Michael says, he believes this one is four continuation eons. It's referring to it. Because each continuation eon, so that would be 80 as well. Anyways, so a great eon is very important to us because this subject comes up when we're talking about how long does it take a Buddha to appear in this world. So we will talk about that when we come back from our break. Before we took our break, that a great eon is very important to us because the subject comes up when we're talking about how long does it take a Buddha to appear in this world. So say, Dei Drangme, Sum La Sangye, Dei Drangme, Sum La Sangye. So, after you decide to begin collecting virtue, the time is countless to become a Buddha. It takes three countless great eons to collect enough virtue to sustain the perception of yourself as a Buddha in paradise forever. So countless refers to 10 to the 60th.
So 20,000 years?
Huh?
How much is that?
I don't know. It's like, that's their idea of countless, I think. So, the whole purpose that Master Vasubandhu talks about this, like why he talks about this, is to strike our mind like this is an awesome amount of energy to reach Buddhahood. So then the question is, when do Buddhas appear in this world? Let's say Kalpa Sangho.
Kalpa Sangho.
So that's eon, good fortune. So good fortune eon. And this present eon that we're in is called the eon of good fortune because 1,000 Buddhas will appear in this eon. Usually Buddhas don't appear while things are improving. They appear as things are getting worse. And people can't practice Buddhism in general unless something really bad is happening in their lives. But something has to be bad enough for people to be interested in practicing Buddhism. I mean, most people, I'm sure you've all seen this, they tend to get interested when they have problems, and then I guess some people are just lucky enough to have the karma to stay with it, or like if we stay with it, it's because we have enough suffering in our life to keep us with it until our practice starts to carry us more, and then we get happier and happier. The Buddhas don't appear in a period below 100 years of lifespan, where we are now, because because beings don't have suitable faculties to grasp the message. So too near the point of blowing up, and there's too much ingrained negativity. And then there's the five degenerations. So these exist in our time and are spreading. When we go through these, we can obviously see them. And it's a sign that the kalpa's end is approaching.
A quick question referring to the slide before. So we won't see Buddhas in this life, like in this world, in our world. Is that what you're referring to, or...
That's what this is saying. Like Shakyamuni Buddha, or you know, Lord Maitreya, who's going to be the next Buddha, won't be appearing now, because it's the period below 100 years of lifespan, which is where we are now.
Okay.
Because people don't have suitable faculties to grasp this. And we can get this sense from just looking around. Like, I mean, look what's happening in our government and social media and just everywhere. It's like it's spreading like wildfire, ignorance is. And it does seem to be getting worse and worse in that sense. And we'll get to a little bit more of it as we go on here too.
Mm-hmm. Like, is it saying that they can't be Buddhas because we're in this time period?
What do you think?
I think that's what it's saying. I mean, there's a teaching, and it's coming from. No, it's just, it's weird, special.
Oh, I knew that.
Well, we will kind of get to this more a little bit later, but if we have the karmic seeds to see someone as a Buddha, then they're a Buddha for us still. So it doesn't mean that we can't build that up or practice it. And it also doesn't mean that everybody still could be a Buddha, but we're not seeing them that way.
Oh yeah, we don't have also seeds, have when things are going really bad is when they show up as well, right? So
yeah,
2,500 years ago there was Shakyamuni Buddha.
Mm-hmm. And so usually the next Buddha doesn't come until the teachings have completely died out, so we're not quite there yet, but we're getting there.
I'm so confused. So then, are there like two different kinds of Buddhas? Like the Buddhas that we're talking about right now are like the Buddhas that we see on like the tongas? Like,
no, I think that the Buddhas that we're talking about right now are like Shakyamuni Buddha here, right now, alive on this planet, teaching. And there's all different layers of teaching. So studying Buddhism, we just get used to like a high degree of, we get used to things being paradoxical. And then also where is all this information coming from that we're studying now?
From the Buddha.
What text are we setting from, like, from what? Which is that?
You're right. Yeah. So
it is a different school. With different, you know, with different beliefs in a certain way. So it is true, and there's also other ideas too. It's kind of how everything is.
Oh, okay.
Everything is in Buddhism. The more we get familiar with more and more teachings, so there's always these different ways of seeing it and looking at it, and it just depends what's helpful to us, because we could think in this way in some times and it would be helpful, and then other times it's not helpful. So it's still true that nothing is self-existent, but kind of the idea that everybody could be a Buddha is more, in my understanding, it's more a tantric teaching, definitely a Mahayana teaching. So it's just a little different.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, five degenerations that are happening. Number one is
say. Which means life, and this means that human life is very fragile. There's many diseases, the body is weak, it's very easy to die. Like, anything could potentially kill us. Anything that keeps us alive could also kill us. Anything that protects us can also kill us. We can die from drinking too much water. We can die walking down the stairs. We could die just sitting or choke on a mint or, you know, like anything. The body's very fragile. And then say Nyan Mong, which are mental afflictions. And so this one is saying that unordained people won't be interested in doing virtuous deeds. People are not attracted to doing good in general. And this, you can see this, or, you know, it seems to be this way. We don't know who everybody is, but it does seem to be that way, that people are really interested in gossip and, you know, like a lot of things that Trump is trying to get through, in my opinion, seem to be a wrong worldview. Maybe we shouldn't get into specifics there, but you know, people, what they want to be doing is doing drugs and going out and drinking a lot and just like spacing out or just watching hours and hours of TV without any like deep meaning to it. They're not like looking for the secret special message. It's just like vegging out or bad-mouthing other people and getting angry at other people and hatred and jealousy. You know, like all these things are just, most people are not really that attracted to doing good. And that's kind of how I think Geshe Michael got a lot of people interested in Buddhism, is by talking about karma and emptiness so much, where you can change your world and you can use karma and emptiness to get what you want in your life, and then kind of hooking people that way, and then maybe they study and really become like deeper practitioners too. Because those things do work and they will work, but we can't control when they work. So at a certain point we have to have like some deeper practice to keep us on the path. Not that there's anything deeper than the practice of karma and emptiness, but using it that way just for personal gain, kind of. And even just thinking of, I mean, we can't read anyone's mind, but do people seem to be interested in this sort of thing? You know, like, even just like it seems to me that, you know, Kim Kardashian is just into her looks and getting an insane amount of plastic surgery for a woman her age, in my opinion. So, you know, like, it seems that that is what people are really attracted to. Like, how many followers does she have on Instagram or wherever else she's on? Or, you know, people are so interested in Meghan Markle because of her style and that sort of thing. So there is, at the same time, there is something potentially sacred in everything. But it does seem to be like this, too. That there's not as many people interested in doing good. So in a sense, that can help with bodhicitta because we have a lot bigger responsibility. It's not like there's thousands of people who want to come and learn about this class when it's being taught, or any other teacher that's here teaching, you know, like the sacred teachings of the Buddha. There's not that many people still that are interested. So we have a bigger responsibility because things are going downhill, so we have to be the ones to help people. Okay. And then the third one, say Semchen.
Semchen.
Semchen. Living being. And basically, we have lousy bodies. Our bodies are not very serviceable. They're not in good shape. They're not strong, coordinated, well-proportioned, that sort of thing. You know, like, we're not like, you can think of, like, Thor and all of the, I don't remember what those beings are called. I think they're on Asgard or something. Asgardians, maybe. I think that might be what they are. But, you know, like, well, they're technically gods. So they're strong, well-proportioned, their bodies are in good physical shape. Like, our bodies are just not like that. Like, we fall and we trip and... in that sense, they're lousy. The fourth one, say do, which means time. But it's really a code word for the things that we live off of. So it's mostly crops, and that they're losing their ability to sustain life. So, you know, everything, like nutrients are being stripped out of all of our food. Food loses its ability to nourish you, to keep you alive and healthy. And for me, I experienced this in India. Like, it didn't matter what I ate, I would get sick from anything. So there, I had different karmic seeds.
I thought you were not saying Mexico.
I have gotten sick there, too. So you can eat all you want, but you don't get healthy. And it's kind of like that in our country. The benefits which food and medicine supply diminish. And it doesn't matter what you eat. All the food has lost its vitality. So it does seem to be going that direction. Like, it's slowly being stripped of all the nutrients and all the goodness. Even fruits and vegetables. They're, like, big and they're covered in wax and they don't have, like, much flavor anymore. And it's just...
Wait, I disagree with that.
And then number five, say Tawa.
Tawa.
Which means worldview. And this basically translates to ordained people are not virtuous. So we're very close to the time when people are no longer interested in Dharma. And we can see this around us. People study it, but they don't practice it. People stop keeping it in their hearts. It's just, like, it seems to be happening that way. Even in, like, our small Dharma center. There's people studying it and not being able to put it into practice. And, you know, in any Dharma center. And even them just attending is one in a million, you know? So it's just getting smaller and smaller. Like, when I think it's stories I've heard of Pavanka Rinpoche. When he would teach, there's like thousands of people there to hear him teach. You know, kind of like the Dalai Lama. And when Pavanka would teach, it said that he didn't use microphone or anything. They didn't have that, but everybody could hear him in like the whole teaching hall or the whole outdoor space or wherever they were. So basically, people stop keeping the teachings in their heart. And right now we're on the verge, or maybe we're already in this time, and that's the beginning of the end of the eon. And we'll reach the part for example, the eon of destruction happens by weapons, and so we'll reach that part too, where people will destroy the world by weapons. It does seem to be that that's how it'll go in our planet right now. And then that's the beginning of the end of the eon. Oh, sorry. I already said that part.
This is the beginning of the end. This five?
Where people, yeah, these five. So people are starting all these things.
So we are. When do you think this started?
That's the hard thing to figure out because the eons are so long. I don't know if it's in this particular class, but Geshe Michael talks about that too, that there's some people, you know, like scholars who have actually tried to calculate it. But that all the years are so big, or the eons, and they're not completely specific either, so it's really hard to tell.
Eons and sounds like a long time.
Yeah.
Is the word eon.
Yeah. And it's like there's no beginning and there's no end. So it's not, I mean, there is maybe some sort of beginning to this eon or something like that. But ultimately, there's no beginning and there's no end. So there can't be like a like we think of linear time, but it's more of a cycle, like circular.
So we don't have a process on when the new Buddha coming?
Well, I think it seems to be kind of close because it said that it's when when the teachings die out completely. So I don't think it would be in our lifetime, but or you know this lifetime, yeah. But maybe a few more, maybe like 500 more years or something like that.
Okay.
It would seem that how you know how it's going.
How does like evolution like play into it then? Like does because like. Like from the science perspective, it's like okay, at one time on the planet there weren't humans. So was that like the start of an eon, or like would the humans being human form be the start of an eon?
I don't think it'll really line up with science, but in some way, I think it was the eon of formation where. The world, the planet formed, and then those beings of light came to be. But science doesn't say that that's how it happened. But that would be when the first beings were on this planet. Or yeah, I think it would be, because I was thinking of all the other types of beings, but it sounds like as those beings started to degenerate, then those other realms, like animal realm and everything, would come into existence. So I don't think it'll line up. But you could say that as they, you know, as they solidified, their bodies got grosser and grosser,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you could fit that in with evolution, maybe. But it's still, the amount of time that science is looking at is very small compared to the amount of time that these eons are looking at.
And if you consider that there are other worlds, I suppose, like,
yeah.
Not just, you know, the way I think it is, it's just, I mean, if you die, and you probably, you don't have to be reborn in this particular world, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it could, I mean, it could be the case, and just, I don't know what science is looking at, like, millions of years, right?
Yeah, or maybe
just guessing for billions, like,
yeah.
Working backwards from things that they know, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, I mean, it could kind of line up, but no, I don't think it would, because evolution says that we, like, don't they say we started, like, from animals, or... and then grew from there, because but they're not saying that's the start of the planet, right? So what we're talking about here is like the start of this whole planet.
No,
so it might be just different.
Because I guess there's just chemicals at the start of the planet, per science's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And the chemicals gave rise to the small microorganisms.
And it's not that it has to necessarily be one way or the other, because it is all empty, so it's not, none of it self-existently one way or another. So we have the karmic seeds to see, like us, who are probably a minuscule percentage of the entire population, have the karma to hear this type of idea and to know about evolution. But most people, I'd say, at least in the majority in the U.S., think that that is how it happened, what science teaches. So they have the karmic seeds to see it that way. So for them, it is that way, even if it didn't happen that way and science says it, we made a mistake, it's this, then they believe that. So it's, you know, it can be both at the same time, because we're looking at this and maybe thinking that this seems more true, or we're not sure. And then at the same time, other people think that evolution, the way science explains it, is the truth. Because really, I think we've talked about this a bunch too, but really our religion and our culture is science. It really is. If things can be proved scientifically, people believe them. I don't think that's been the case throughout history, even recent history, that, like, it's extreme materialism. All of the sacred has been stripped out, which I think is partly why we're attracted to Buddhism, or, you know, anyone is to some spiritual path, because it's like we're starved for any talk of, like, the divine or the sacred, which we all know is there, and we've all experienced. But I think it's kind of easy to forget it, too, if it's never talked about in culture, and people are kind of looked at as crazy for believing in that sort of thing. But we don't live in that sort of world, because we live in the Dharma community, and we're around people who believe in the sacred and the divine. And there are other people who believe that, too, but mostly it's like the religion is science, and like the divine, it's almost like the divine is like the family now. Like that's the that's like the most sacred thing or something like that. It's, I don't know, it's really interesting. So, going back to what we talked about before, the thing about taking so many eons to reach Buddhahood, if we really calculate it and look at it that way, it's depressing and it seems unattainable, which I think is maybe how other practitioners could say, like, I'm just trying to have a better rebirth, or, you know, practitioners from other lineages. I guess you'll hear people saying that. I haven't heard it myself, but we also, like, we have the hopes to reach it in this life, because in this world we have Tantra, which is very, you know, like a great virtue to have that. And so the secret teachings are what can get us there in this lifetime. What's the shortest amount of time that you can get there?
7 years. 3 years.
3 years. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yep. 3 years, 3 months, 3 days, which is the length of the retreat that Geshe Michael and everyone else were doing, and other people.
If they ever do it again, I'll join.
What's
Venerable Tenzin?
Uh-huh. When I went to her talk at the Lions, she was talking about her three. It was so cool.
She did it with Geshe Michael.
Was it with when Loma Christi? It was,
I think,
all
so.
When I was there. I was so excited, like all these really amazing people.
Yeah.
And I didn't even really know. All I knew was I was super attracted to Loma Maru.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's great. So, yeah, that's the. And then. Emily, I believe, has done it as well.
Elaine.
And then Elaine, yeah.
Do they offer it at that same location, or is it?
I don't know what's going on there. I believe you still can, but
I think they
I
want
know.
To be a bit more quiet after, you know, all what everything that happened.
Yeah. I'm not in the loop with any of that. I haven't been, like, following what's going on.
Have you been to the Diamond Mountain you have, right? Mm-hmm. The in Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
How is this?
It was so hot when I was there.
Oh my gosh, I bet.
And we were camping in tents down by the main university, or, you know, where they have the teachings and stuff, usually. But then they have the teaching night. Nighttime. They would have it up on the hill in this tent, and then we would go in there first and be really quiet so that the other people, the retreatants, could come in, and then the teacher would be in the middle, kind of, and that would be closed off so you couldn't see the people.
I can't even imagine being able to come out of that deep of a retreat and be around that many people. Like, the energy would be, I mean, for my mind, where I am, it would be so overwhelming. Oh, my God.
She was saying that she had to come out of the retreat, I think, three times, or two. One was, and she said, I felt like I was on acid or something. Having a major, like,
like, she had to come out and go to the doctor or something, or, like...
Her dad...
She had to stop, I guess.
Oh.
And then something else.
Oh, so she didn't come out because of that, but there were other things that happened.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But she went back in right after.
Oh, it must be so hard to just, like, come out and go back in.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably a lot better.
I think it must be like
place,
the greatest experience.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And she was not a nun going in.
Yeah.
But then when she came out, she was like, I mean, I really want. She knew something, and then she had a communication with her teacher, and he knew she was gonna.
Was it Lama Zopa?
Yes. Wait, is he the one that's the main one for the
Vajrapani?
Uh-huh.
At PMT.
Who's the Vajrapani?
He started it.
It was him.
Well, I always get Lama Zopa and Lama Yeshe confused. I think it was Lama Zopa that started.
I think so. I think that was
And him. I believe he's the one that's passed away. And then Lama Yeshe is still guiding that organization. Yeah, I believe so.
Also, Tamara.
Yeah.
Tamara.
Yeah.
But she's not teaching, right?
I don't know.
She went back to Arizona.
Hmm.
I think Joshua said she was teaching at one point. Maybe it's yoga, though.
She was teaching yoga.
Yeah.
I went to a couple of her classes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she actually came to a class of mine when I was teaching at Asha. Yeah. I think, like, right when she was, had come out.
She was doing the street yoga for homeless people before she went to the retreat.
Mm.
Class in
High Force
with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yoga class.
And Dasha was there. Yeah.
Have you talked to Dasha by any chance?
Not much. Mm-mm. Like, when did I see her? She came to class not that long ago. On Tuesday.
She was at a picnic. Oh, this Tuesday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember how long ago, maybe 3 years ago or something. It wasn't like this week or something. It was like, yeah, maybe it was a month ago. Mm-hmm. She was in town. It was when Emily was teaching. Okay. So the main point that we land on is that it is possible to reach the goal in this life, and it does take a lot of hard work and meditation and study and good service to your Lama. And then this is what Geshe Michael says, then a crucial time comes where you have to make a big leap, and you just have to go for it. Don't be wimpy. But when the time comes, we'll know.
Why are you looking at me?
And for me, how it happens is a lot of times I kind of look back and I think, oh, that was that time. Or, like, I don't always realize when things are happening or what they are until I look at it from a different perspective. And then I realize, oh, that's exactly what that teaching is talking about. So sometimes we just are so used to, like, not thinking things are special, and then we hear the teachings and we take them a certain way and we expect them to look a certain way, but usually they're not going to. And it doesn't mean that they're any less amazing when they happen, but we just have to kind of take all the teachings as we take them and then be open to the fact that it might be completely different than how we originally thought it was going to be. So we just have to study very sweetly and happily and joyfully, and our whole life will transform beyond what we can imagine. And there's nothing better that we can be doing with our lives. Like, what else could we be doing that's better? And nothing is going to be much easier either. There's still going to be, you know, if we're just choosing a regular path of life, there's going to be suffering coming up all the time, but we're just going to have less tools to deal with it. So we might as well put in the work so that we can really get somewhere in our life and make some big, big spiritual progress. Because we can all do it. We all have everything that we need. We just have to take the time and make it a priority. And normally it's normal that we have to study for a very long time before we study Tantra. And probably for most of us, that's a really good thing. Yeah. And so even if we're not studying Tantra formally at a certain point after, like when we're ready for it, it'll start opening up anyways. And then if we start studying it formally, we'll realize, oh, I was already doing this. So it's not that being like held back or something like that. So it'll unfold when it's ready anyways. And then when it's time to have formal tantric teachings, then we'll have that. And then, you know, it'll be time for that and we'll do that. Yeah. There'll be some big leap, like some big decision, and you'll just know that this is the thing that I have to do. And he said at that point, don't be wimpy, you just have to do it. And I don't know what that is, but... kind of. If I think about it, I haven't really thought about it that way. But yeah, I think so.
I mean, like, every time you go into it, it's like...
Yeah.
But then you give up, or whatever, you know, something happens.
It sounds like he's talking about, like, you know, you make, like, a leap of faith. And it's kind of like when you get to know your own life and how your life goes. For me, mine tends to be relatively, like, consistent, and things happen that feel big to me, but they're not necessarily huge disruptions that people could see from the outside. And then some people have karmic seeds where they have, like, huge, tumultuous things happening all the time, and it's just, like, how their life goes, and then there's people in between. So mostly... expect your practice to go kind of the way your life goes. And so for me, it wouldn't be some really big, from my perspective, tumultuous thing, because that's not how my life goes, and that would be too much for me too. The people who have that, they can handle that sort of thing, and they're like, you know, they're used to that. And in my world, it doesn't work that way. And I'm glad it doesn't work that way, because I don't want that. I mean, I don't want the suffering that I have either, but we're all given the suffering that we can handle. And so, and everyone's suffering, I think it's kind of like in the same way to the level that we can all handle. It doesn't mean that everyone's suffering is the same, like that my suffering is the same as someone who's living on the street and doesn't have anything to eat. It's not like that, but it's like if we're looking, like we can't compare it to somebody else's life or practice unless we have examples of people who we feel feel like our lives are more similar to, then we can kind of look to them and judge that way. Like, I feel like for me, it feels more like, well, definitely LaMami, and also Doug and Winston. That's where I feel like my practice, in not to the same degree at all, but it's kind of similar. Like, they're very consistent in their, and kind of consistent in, like, their demeanor too, you know, not just their practice, but like the way their life goes. And then there's some people who are just like more comes up, and it's, you know, it's a little bigger. And then, you know, there's people who resonate with that sort of practice or energy, or are kind of like flavor of karmic seed. Yeah, because when we were first starting out, I would always compare myself to other people I was practicing with, like, a lot. And I still do today, but it's not as much because I've just seen it over and over now. But I was comparing it to people who have completely different lives than I do. Like, I don't experience life similar to them at all. And I was expecting my spiritual practice to be the same as theirs, or like to that passionate, or like expressive degree, you know, like my life's not, that's not how I am, that's not my personality. So it was like a complete opposite thing to be comparing myself to, you know. So yeah, so I don't know. I think for me, it's probably, if I thought about it a little more, I could probably pinpoint something exactly, but maybe it also hasn't come up yet. Like that moment of taking like a big leap.
Remember, you were working for Nordstrom.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that was like 3 years ago, I think. Almost. Okay, let's see. We're on class 8. Oh, we don't have time anyways, but let me see. Maybe we have time for a really short meditation. Okay, we could do the end of this meditation, just very short. A few moments, just soften your body, sitting up nice and tall. This will be pretty short, but just imagining the day that you'll become a Buddha. Whatever detail comes to you. Maybe the light quality of your body. You don't have blood or bones or flesh anymore. physically you're completely perfect, young. And there's no thought or planning or premeditation required, you're just constantly helping, serving all beings. You know always the right thing to say, what will help somebody. Deep love for all beings. The biggest, deepest understanding of emptiness and karma that we can come to. Dedicating all of this merit to reaching this goal for the sake of all these beings who are suffering. And we'll offer this by saying the mantra. Puki Chikshing Me Tok Cham Virabhin Shinyan Degen Padi Sange Shingdu Mikte Uwaki Jokun Amdak Shingla Chuparshu Hiram Guru Radna Mandalakam Niryatayami Dike Wokun Sunam Yashe Sok Sok Shing Sunam yeshe lejumwe, tampa kuni to parshum.